The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fernelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fernelli. That's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at YouTube.com/Cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe. Smash that like and come and join us in the chat, a.k.a. the Cover 3 tailgate. Lots to get to here on a Thursday. We are getting interactive. We are also continuing our conversation from Wednesday because the quarterback battles that you need to know for spring practice. And Danny, let's go. Okay.
So this is the car is running outside, running to the airport. Two things I need to do. One, I am coming to Chicago. So Tom Fornelli, you're more than welcome. If you want to come see some incredible top level elite travel volleyball, love to see you. If you want to go to dinner, bring Lynn, love to see you.
Cool.
But more importantly, let's go pack. Shout out. I had to show you guys this because I think you'll get a kick out of it. The boys at Breaking Tea, they do a great job. They love college football. I love free stuff. So a perfect combo.
Yep.
Yes!
Let's go.
Let's go.
Oh, man. Look at that.
How great is that? That was a little surprise because they did some stuff for Ben. They did a Benergy and Big Game Benny. And it was pretty cool. So they hooked it up so he gets a cut of it. And they threw that one as there as a surprise. So if they win tomorrow, I'll be there in Dallas Sunday rocking it. So let's go pack.
Go. Man, shout out to Breaking Tea for hooking it up with the
That was awesome.
Those of you who are listening to it, Danny crashing in on YouTube.com/Cover3. His t-shirt says Ben Middlebrook's uncle. An NC State shirt. Ben Middlebrook's uncle. Love it. Love it.
All right. I got to go before I miss my flight. Have a good show.
Good to see you. Safe travels. See y'all. All right. There we go. Thank you, Mikey. All right. We're going to start about some stuff. What?
Why are there no noon or 1 o'clock opening day games?
I think there was one, but was it one of the ones that's rained out? Like, cause I know like the Phillies game was rained out.
I got voluntold to go to my son's Easter thing. I'm volunteering at the school today, which is why I'm bouncing early when I don't have my Rays hat on. And I was like, cool. There's like a little sports bar kind of down the road. We can go watch a bunch of games together after school before nap time. And negative.
Yeah, 3 o'clock, I think, is the first pitch. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's, I mean, right now here in North Carolina, it's soaked. I mean, it is just raining up and down the mid-Atlantic, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's some there. Our friend Ryan in the tailgate jumped in about 30 minutes before we got started, said, setting the odds at minus 125, Bud has a Rays hat, plus 200 for Nelly has a Sox hat. I saw somebody else even got some action on that. Unfortunately, you didn't have the insider information that Bud has to go to an Easter egg hunt at his kid's school and therefore could not be having the hat head. So if you had that insider information, you knew that the odds were off and you just, you know, painted the board.
Like Michael Porter.
While we're on the subject.
Dante
Porter. Okay.
Shout out to Cover 3 superfan and super agent Brett Tesler for sending me this t-shirt this week. And also this signed photo of Harold Baines. Shout out, Brett.
All right, let's go. All right, so as Bud mentioned, he's going to have to run in a little bit. So we're going to keep taking questions from the chat. Maybe talk, speaking of bets, talk about NCAA trying to outlaw prop bets. We'll get into that in a little bit. But we want to, especially on matters of personnel and roster construction, want to make sure we get Bud in on this one. So we're going to continue our quarterback battles to know for spring practice. We did the Big Ten in Wednesday's episode because, as Thomas mentioned on the show, the best riddle to tell any Big Ten fan is, who's the best quarterback in the Big Ten? Watch their face scrunch up and watch them have no answers. That's how uncertain the situation is. But in the SEC, the league that we said in yesterday's show probably has some of the more certain quarterback situations, there are a few of note. And I want to start with the same game, Bud, that you played yesterday. Alabama. It's Milroe.
I think it's Milroe.
I think so. I think it's go ahead. I don't want, just keep.
So, I mean, look, there are some concerning things there, right? Isaiah Bond skipped town to go play with Quinn Ewers, who did not have the best year last year, but he certainly had a better year throwing the football than Jalen Milroe did. I was looking on Twitter yesterday. I forgot who had this, but shout out to whomever did. Like, Jermaine Burton had, like, by far the highest rate of all the NFL draft prospects of uncatchable or just like badly thrown passes. You know, Florida State is pretty damn happy with what they've got out of Malik Benson so far in spring camp. And he was terrible, like numbers wise, at Alabama last year. So, I mean, Milroe does have significant throwing issues, which could get better. And I mean, I think DeBoer is a hell of a lot better coach than Tommy Reese is. So, like, we shouldn't discount his ability to improve. But can we say it's fully locked up? They did go out and get Austin Mack.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, and DeBoer is saying right now, he's saying all the right things. He's saying, like, Milroe is going to be the starter. He's going to get the reps with the ones. And I'm sure that is exactly what the plan is. But it's just, how strong is that grasp of the job? Like, if it's a poor start to the season, how long is he going to hold on to the gig?
Also, what do they do at receiver? Right? Like, they lost their top three guys from last year. And they lost Amari Nyblack, who was potentially the best pass-catching tight end they might have. So, how aggressive are they in the transfer portal? Like, if I'm a transfer receiver, Washington sent in three guys in the NFL draft this year. Like, you're probably thinking, hey, Jamarcus Shepard does a hell of a job developing receivers there. I'm interested in that. You might want to go play there if you're confident you're going to get the ball from the quarterback. But as it stands now, like, Ryan Williams is going to be a 17-year-old potential starter for Alabama. And I think he's an amazing prospect, but he's still like 17 in the SEC. Do you have the receivers to favor a quarterback whose best attribute is throwing? Because Milroe's best attribute is just running. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see kind of what happens with the portal.
So Alex Scarborough works 24/7 Sports now. And, you know, always has just had like a great beat on Alabama. He talked with Jamarcus Shepard recently. And I think if I'm to just spin the narrative forward, which I guess since we're just, you know, conversation about the sport, their angle that they're selling is, we are experts at this coaching thing. Like, we get you in here, we can like fine tune stuff. Can they fine tune Milroe? I don't know. But that's where, especially at wide receiver, I would not be surprised if we look up and we start to see players playing at a high level after full spring practice, full off season, you know, get into fall camp. By the time Alabama takes the field, even if I am not certain of what that depth chart looks like and who are going to be catching the passes, based on what we saw at Washington from Jamarcus Shepard and Kalen DeBoer, I kind of feel like that should be something that they're going to be okay at. The Austin Mack proposition is that he is a very intriguing prospect. Tom, you talk about saying all the right things. Doesn't this feel like a locker room move too? As long as you believe the locker room is behind Jalen Milroe, you let him go out there until the locker room believes that their better chance to win is elsewhere.
Yeah, I think when you're, I mean, it's different now. It's hard to say because there's always so much change now and from year to year in a roster of any teams with the transfer portal. But you bring in the coaching change. I think that it's important with all the change that they've come in to try to have some semblance of consistency and continuity from last year's team. Because, I mean, last year's team did reach the college football playoff. So it's like if you come in and you just start, oh, no, he's not going to be our starter. It's like, well, he was our starter and we got to the playoff and won the SEC last year. What's wrong with him? So, yeah, I do think there has to be some of that. But, again, I think that new coach bringing a guy with him from his old program, there's always going to be a chance that, you know, Milroe loses his gig.
But last thing on Bama. Like we made some pretty big changes to our Bama site. Like Bama 247, now that like you have a new coaching staff there that is more open, you can actually interview assistants and whatnot, and you can go to practices. Like Bama 247 is loaded with guys who are creative. Like I covered a Saban style program with Jimbo. It's like you just get the head man, you get no coordinators, you get very limited practice access. It was very formulaic, right? And you know, you get some inside stuff, but it was, you know, if you put too much of it out, you lose your inside stuff. Like Alex Scarborough, John Talty, Brett Greenberg, Cody Goodwin, Mike Rodak is like, that's a nice team at Bama 247 to have out there. Like now that they actually have opportunities to cover the program in a creative way and have like actual access to people.
Yep. Great call there. All right. Arkansas. So Talen Green from Boise State, where, and as I've said many times, I can put together one cut up and you can be like, wow. And I can put together another cut up and you can be like, oh no, you know, very high ceiling and floor, very, very far apart. Jacoby Criswell, you know, at one point, Mack Brown tried to trick us as though he was pushing Drake May for the starting job. You know, I think that when he was KJ Jefferson's backup, you kind of felt like that was that stylistic fit offensively. And then Malachi Singleton, again, another wild card, younger player. How, Tom, do you have a good read on this one?
I mean, Criswell's been there for years as KJ's backup. KJ leaves and they hit the portal to go get another QB. So, I mean, I think that it's not to say Criswell doesn't have a shot at the starting QB job. I think.
Oh, and Petrino. Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
And Petrino comes in.
We might as well mention him as the fourth quarterback in the battle because this is like how big of a factor he plays in this discussion.
But I think when you go in the portal and you bring in a QB, it gives you an indication of how confident you are about what you already currently have in the room. So I do look at Talen Green and he's not the same player as Jefferson. They're both like unique body types. And like Jefferson's like 6'2 and 240 pounds. Talen Green's really tall and long, looks like a power forward more than anything. But I have always been kind of intrigued by Green since his start at Boise State. Like I see like a lot of potential in there. But as you mentioned, Chip, there's also a whole lot of, oh my God, what are you doing? The floor has been very low. If Bobby Petrino can kind of just raise that floor and get, you know, just helped him tap into his overall potential, I think Green's got the best chance to win that starting job because I do think he has the highest ceiling of anybody in the room.
I tend to agree. Arkansas's receivers last year were very disappointing. And that, like, they had some hype, and it was sort of that kind of preseason hype where it's like, man, this guy's really big and fast. I'm like, yeah, but is he good at playing receiver? And the answer overwhelmingly was no. But that doesn't mean that there's a permanence to that evaluation, right? There is some chance you can get better. A second year in the system might really help you. Arkansas actually returns their top 8 pass catchers from last year. So, and the offensive line, I don't think will take a big step back. I mean, I don't have great vibes from Arkansas right now. Like they've had some pretty notable recent decommitments and, you know, Trey just does such a good job on Hog Sports. But in terms of like their receiver situation, I think just the continuity of bringing those guys back has to help them a little bit. I would lean Talen Green, but like, if there were betting odds on this, I would probably not be betting on this based on what I've read so far. All these guys can run, though.
Yep.
Too. And I would expect QB run to continue to be an important part of this offense.
All right, let's do two more sort of question propositions. The first one with a returning starter. Auburn is Peyton Thorne?
I mean, are you rebuilding? Like, are you trying to get a better draft pick?
Are you tanking?
If you are, then yeah, Peyton Thorne is your starter in 2024. I mean, I think Peyton Thorne will be your starter after spring, but I we've talked about it a lot. I think Auburn will be looking in that portal after spring to see who hits it, because I think that if you look at the actions they have taken, they didn't land any transfer quarterbacks, but there's been interest in transfer quarterbacks. So take Hugh Freeze's word that we believe in Peyton Thorne and Peyton Thorne's our guy at, you know, face value.
I'm not really sure who is going to become available. We talked about this yesterday with Michigan. I think a lot of the conversation applies even more so to Auburn. Auburn likes Peyton Thorne more than I do. Do they actually like Peyton Thorne? I don't know. To me, given Auburn's schedule, given where the roster is, Nick Saban's retirement changes this a little bit, because I do think there's some pressure to maybe get a dub over Alabama this year, although the game is in Tuscaloosa. But year three for Hugh Freeze is kind of be the prove it year, given like all the freshmen that they've just signed and kind of where those guys should be in their cycle. And Auburn clearly is not pushing in their chips so far in the transfer portal like an Ole Miss is. They've kept the powder pretty dry comparatively. So if I had to guess, I think they would stick with Peyton Thorne unless somebody comes available who's really good. The Memphis kid, Hennigan, is the one that I think a lot of people would point to.
Oh, but also, like, you know, Auburn, Memphis. Like, I mean, you could sell that.
But people already made runs at him in the winter window, and he said no. So I don't know that he wants to go anywhere, right?
Hypothetical. We talked about Ohio State yesterday. If, like, a Devin Brown or a Lincoln Kindholz hit the portal, is Auburn going after them? Because Devin Brown strikes me as a Hugh Freeze QB.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a little more mobile. Devin Brown is he's a year three guy?
I think it's his third year, yeah.
Okay, so part of the answer here would depend on what is Auburn's truthful opinion of Walker White, the freshman they just signed. And, like, because if Devin Brown would have, he'd have 2 years to play or three?
I believe two. But I can't confirm that.
Because there is some sort of, like, you know, politics, keeping everybody happy considerations here. Like, workplace satisfaction matters. You can't take a guy who's too close in line to Walker White if you actually like Walker White.
Do you think there's any arrogance within that staff in terms of believing what you need in order to be a successful offense?
I mean, have they ever had elite quarterback play?
That's kind of what I mean. Like,
yeah,
he was there for Chad Kelly. I know it was Bo Wallace first.
Yeah.
And then Chad Kelly. And to be fair, Chad Kelly is like one of the best CFL quarterbacks still to this day. Man's out here tearing it up, up north. But
and they had, what's his name? He went to the Titans, who for that level was extremely good.
Malik Willis.
Yeah. At Liberty. But, you know, I that's where I wonder if we look at that quarterback situation, we're like, man, you got to go out there. I wonder if Hugh Freeze and also maybe members of that staff are saying, no, we can work with this. You know, we scheme it up. I don't need to have perfect accuracy if they're wide TF open. So, you know, that's the arrogance might be a more negative word than what I'm going for. Maybe confidence would be something else. All right, one last SEC one. I think it's Blake Shapen at Mississippi State, right?
Yeah.
I'm biased. I was never real high on Chris Parkson, so I'm gonna say yes, it's Shapen. But I guess in theory, one of the either Shapen or the guy they just signed, Van Buren. Like in theory, one of those guys could win it, but I think it's Shapen.
I think Shapen's fine. I think Shapen is fine to good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, too, like a lot of that offense will depend on the wide receiver talent you have as much as the cornerback talent, because you need guys who can, you know, run those routes and beat guys deep.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Again, because Jeff Lebby, former Oklahoma offensive coordinator, taking over there as the Mississippi State head coach. All right, let's turn our attention. Ooh, actually, coming up on the other side, we turn our attention to the Atlantic Coast Conference, where North Carolina has to replace Drake May. Florida State has to replace Jordan Travis, and lots more, plus the Big 12 and others. Next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced. Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
John in the tailgate chiming in, asking where Arnett, as in Zach Arnett, is. He's actually Ole Miss. He's a defensive analyst. So,
Short drive down the highway, and now he's got a new job.
Lane Kiffin putting them all together. So the battle to replace Drake May includes a AARP card holder in Max Johnson on his third Power 5 school and his sixth year of college football, and a redshirt sophomore in Connor Harrell, who we saw against West Virginia in the bowl game with highs and lows, you know, throughout that. He got a little bit banged up, and then once his mobility was cut, it was kind of, you know, you lost your greatest strength, I think, there. Tom, how do you see that one playing out?
I it depends on what you're my guess is it's going to be Max Johnson, because if you look at North Carolina, like the condition that they're in, like Drake May was pretty much carrying that team for the most part last season. As Drake May went, so went the Tar Heels. He's gone. You've got Omarion Hampton back, and I like him, but I don't think that he's going to be – I don't know if he's a workhorse without the threat of Drake May in the passing game as much – as successful as he was as a workhorse. And I think if you're North Carolina, like I think Connor Harrell brings a much higher ceiling. Like I remember the first time when I was watching that bowl game, and he took off, and like he had speed, like when he just – in acceleration that you just didn't see a lot of guys have at a quarterback. So I was like, oh, okay, this kid's got something there. He has to work, obviously, as a thrower, but – I think you have a much higher floor with at this point with Max Johnson, because you still have to develop Harrell. So I think that based on Mac Brown's kind of situation with the Tar Heels in the future there, they're going to want the floor more than the ceiling in 2024. So I'm guessing Johnson will be the starter at the beginning of the year. Whether he finishes there, I don't know.
I'm going to reserve my time. Like, I trust Chip on this. I can't wait for the Inside Carolina summer school. The offensive line concerns me quite a bit with how much they've lost.
And Max Johnson gets hurt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm almost going into the season, if I am Chip Lindsey, the offensive coordinator, that you need to be prepared that you're going to need both of these quarterbacks across 12 games, because there has not been any sort of examples that Max Johnson is going to be able to make it through 12 games. He holds on to the ball. He gets sacked a lot. He uses that big body to run, which is good, but then he takes a lot of hard hits. Base it around Omarion Hampton. And hey, and don't forget, Jake Johnson is a stud. Max's brother, Jake, is an excellent tight end. So you get your running back, you get your tight end. Hopefully you've got some of those other contributors stepping up at wide receiver. But I wonder if it's Max as the QB1, but in the back of their mind, they know that they're probably going to need Connor to be able to make it through the season and to be able to make it, honestly, even to a bowl game. Let's talk about Florida State then. I mean, it's got to be DJ, right, bud? I mean, that's you don't throw your hat in the ring for all those quarterbacks and then land DJ and then have Brock Glenn push him for the job.
I would say it's probably like 80-20 DJ. They do like Brock Glenn a lot. Like, they NIL'd Brock Glenn as a freshman. They kept Brock Glenn around, you know, even after bringing DJ in. Like, he announced he had an NIL deal, I believe, as well on social media. So they were pretty impressed with some of the throws that he made against Georgia. Obviously, like, that bowl game was crazy, but he did throw a good number of dimes for a true freshman against a UGA defense. So they like him. I think they've seen kind of what they have in DJ, which is just solid, like a good, solid college quarterback. And if you're doing it right and you have real NIL, most of the ACC does not, like, that's kind of, you're kind of playing on easy mode. Like, he should be able, like, this is kind of a bridge year. I don't think this is a team that's going to, you know, if they got into the playoff, I don't think most of us think they would, like, win the playoff, you know? But if I had to guess at this point, I would say it's a strong DJ lean.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know exactly what you're going to get from DJU. So I think that there's a certainty there that's appealing.
Yeah, I mean, like, big arm, not super mobile, not real accurate, okay? Mm-hmm. But they've upgraded the speed. They're going to try and throw a lot of deep balls, and they'll probably get a lot of stops on defense.
For Cal.
Oh, God, they're in the ACC.
So,
no, you didn't mention Chandler Rogers in the doc.
Is Chandler Rogers, did he go there?
Chandler Rogers had 29 touchdowns, 5 interceptions for North Texas last year. He is a redshirt senior on his last year of eligibility, and his arrival is a little bit problematic to Fernando Mendoza carrying over the progress that he had last year, because Mendoza takes the reins of the offense after you're going through, like, Ben Finley, Sam Jackson, and Mendoza, last 8 games he's the starter, includes 3 straight wins to close the regular season to get the Bears to 6-6, and you're like, okay, we're building with the young guy. But then that staff goes out and they bring in Rogers. I am weirdly fascinated by the Cal quarterback job when it comes to the ACC outlook. But again, all of those words are bananas. But I am very curious about that decision, because Rogers, it seems to me, should be able to come in and win that job. But then that would be disappointing for all the progress that you had made with Mendoza over the last part of the year.
I would assume that's a wide open race. Like, I think you bring in Chandler Rogers, sure, but are you promising Chandler Rogers anything?
I mean, I like Chandler Rogers a lot. Not for, like, a real, real high level P5 or P4 mm-hmm. type program, but I thought he was one of the best parts of that North Texas team last year.
Agree. So, competition, though, that was the thing that when I was digging in on this for a piece for CBSSports.com, the one that I was getting back was like, yeah, but, like, let's put in the adjustment calculator for what those stats looked like versus, you know, what was going on in the Pac-12. It was a much tougher strength of schedule that Mendoza had to face, tougher defenses, tougher opponents than what Rogers had going up against North Texas's schedule.
All right, I got one for you in the ACC. UVA. Are we done with the Tony Musket stuff? Like, we're all in on our turnover boy, Anthony Calandria?
It's got to be Calandria. He's electric. The whoopsie daisy king. He's just super fun. Like, and if you're Virginia football, and you have a choice between a really, really fun guy who might make some mistakes, or just Johnny, I don't know, fundamentals, whatever you want to call him, give me the exciting guy. Give me something to be excited about when I watch Virginia football this fall.
How much does job security play into this? Like, if you're Tony Elliott, and you're trying to build for something long-term, and you're trying to get to year 4 of your coaching tenure, can you actually afford to play Tony Musket?
I think Tony Musket is a threat. I think it's just to remind Calandria, like, hey, bud, okay.
not every play is fourth and goal at the end of the game. Yeah.
Right. That's like his presence on the roster is as a friendly reminder. Like, I'm trying to figure out.
The irony is one guy's name Musket, but the other guy's the gunslinger.
Look at that.
Yeah, look at that. Anything else in the ACC that stands out?
Pitt.
I have no
horrendous
idea.
Quarterback play last year. I mean, that was there's a lot of G5 teams that would be embarrassed by how bad that quarterback play was. And Pitt's not in the G5 league. So, all right. Yarnell, Christian VU, or VR. How are we saying it now? I forgot how we say it.
I call
it. And then they took Eli Holstein from Alabama, who I'm wrong on plenty of stuff. I just never saw it personally with him as a recruit. So I was shocked that Alabama took him after seeing him in person. Maybe Pitt can get something out of him. I think he'd be a really good tight end, actually. But
he's not,
I don't know.
He's not been super healthy. And that's not going to help when you're already probably fighting an uphill battle.
Oh, is he already dinged there?
Yeah.
At Pitt?
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Let's see. Early March. Narduzzi said, Nate's looking good overall. He's leading. So Nate Yarnell is leading, but the other guys are challenging him. You look at Christian, he's challenging him. Eli, he's done a nice job. He's a little dinged up from winter workouts. He's about 90%.
Okay.
I'm going to say Nate Yarnell.
Rest of ACC before I got to jump. I'm assuming Boston College is going to go status quo. I'm interested to see like how that offense changes, you know, like
because sure. O'Brien, don't not start Castellanos.
I agree. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And I think probably to keep Castellanos, you probably need to have made some sort of assurances that like, hey, this is what we're going to do. Vitek settled, Miami settled, Georgia Tech is definitely settled. Who am I missing here?
Louisville, Tyler Shuck.
I think it has to be.
Yeah,
I would assume so.
Cuse is settled.
QB.
Shuck is such a Brom QB.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just follow the instructions, boss. Hey, old guy, do what you're supposed to do. Don't do anything other than what we're supposed to do. We will work around you and what you can and cannot do.
The one I'm a little interested in, just because I don't know, and I haven't asked. That's on me for not doing good enough show prep. Hank Bachmeyer at Wake, or are we thinking Michael Kern?
Oh, open competition.
Oof. Okay. All right.
Fade the Deeks.
Yeah.
Open competition because Dave Clawson needs as much competition as possible.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to have that in order to get better quarterback play. He needs to introduce as much as possible, and he needs to have him competing as much as possible and see what kind of development he can get. There was not that long ago, we were talking about Warren Ruggiero like he was, you know, the hot new stuff. Mm-hmm. Big spring, big off season for that offensive staff, because you do not have a Sam Hartman there to work with. You do not have Michael Wolford, a Jamie Newman. Like that run is up.
Jamal Banks transferred out. Keyshawn transferred out. Grimes transferred out.
Yep. All right. What about before you got to run Big 12? Donovan Smith's out at Houston. Hoover's out at TCU. Rashad is now out at Arizona State.
He hurt his thumb in a moving accident. Mm-hmm. All right. Real quick takes on these. And Tom, I'll listen back to the show. Tell me I'm wrong. I think Sam Leavitt actually had a shot to win that job for Arizona State, like outright, even if Rashad is healthy. So I wouldn't totally discount that. I thought Zion Crisp was just a better player than Donovan Smith was. So maybe the Donovan Smith injury like cements that. Who's the other one? Oh, TCU with Hoover out. I will say this Haas Hingy kid, if you guys haven't seen him.
I have not.
He's like a little, like he's short, but he's very athletic, kind of a big time playmaker type dude. Like I don't want
to Kyler-ish. Tiny playmaker.
Copping the Menzel, but just kind of, you know, juking around and just makes things happen. I'd imagine he's an excellent point guard too. I haven't watched his basketball stuff if he plays. That's really all I got on those three.
All right. Yeah. Let's see. Nick says, who is behind Cade Klubnik? That's Chris Vezina, right? At Clemson?
I think so. Yeah. I did actually hear that he had made good strides because last year in practice he was struggling. So that's encouraging for Clemson fans.
Yeah. Isn't that like the best goalie award in the NHL?
That's the Vezina.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, look at old Puck's Bud over there. You got it right there.
I'll play a little hockey until I hit a growth spurt and you're too big. All right. I'll see you guys later. Right. Go play the Easter Bunny.
Coming up on the other side, the NCAA wants to get rid of player props. Do we think they'll be successful? That and questions from the big old bag of mail. Next.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, we had to get through the rest of that quarterback battle stuff because as an extension of Wednesday. So now let's hit some news from the week, which includes an effort from the NCAA to outlaw prop bets. This is an effort that's actually already been successful in Ohio. It is an effort that in some states, as gambling has gone legal, is, you know, already saying we're not going to do this. It's been taken care of by the legislative bodies that are approving this legal sports wagering. So in a big statement where Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, says sports betting issues are on the rise across the country, with prop bets continuing to threaten the integrity in competition and leading to student athletes and professional athletes getting harassed. The NCAA has been working with states to deal with these threats, and many are responding by banning college preps. Banning college prop bets. Of course, at the professional ranks, we've got the ongoing scandal with Raptors forward Jontay Porter. Tom, we like player props.
We do
a special show on the morning of the national championship game every single year, laying out like a dozen player props each for the game. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Charlie Baker and the NCAA will be successful here?
I mean, so far you've seen a lot of you've seen a lot of athletic directors be successful in keeping their schools from being bet on at all in the states where they reside. Like, I can't bet on the Illini game against Iowa State tonight, at least not at a legal sports book. I don't know. You've recently had legal sports betting in North Carolina. Can you bet on the Tar Heels game?
Yes. And when I was in Connecticut, up in the CBS Sports HQ studios, no UConn, no Yale.
Mm-hmm.
Thought the board was broken.
Yeah.
Where's the Huskies at?
It does get confusing sometimes because I will go look on an app and be like, all right, I'm going to bet. Oh, wait, that's right. This team plays in Illinois. I can't bet on them. But I don't know if they'll be successful, but I get it. Like, I understand where they're coming from. It's you can, like, I don't know, like, not even just the throwing the games part, or just because, I mean, again, you mentioned it. Jontay Porter in the NBA is currently under investigation for apparently, you know, some whatever practices, maybe with some prop bets. I don't know if you heard about Shohei Ohtani, but I mean, it's like, this is something that is taking every sport. In soccer, Sandro Tonali, who now plays for Newcastle, is now being investigated again for betting on some bets he made in the legal sports book. Like, this is everywhere. So I don't blame the NCAA from trying to be proactive and taking this away, because it is one thing where you can, you know, like, if you're a player and you can, you're more vulnerable to it, both from a fixing standpoint and just from abuse from fans standpoint. Like, you know, if I've got a prop bet tonight in one of the games, and if the kid doesn't match it, I'm going to send him angry DMs. You know what I'm saying? Just let him know that he's failed me and let me down. I am. Uh-huh.
I know Chuck Baker is a loyal follower of the Cover 3 podcast. Don't worry, Chuck Baker. You're not don't come at Tom Fornelli. He's not part of the problem. So there is the side of this, and for the Jontay Porter, my understanding is that in two different games, he just took himself out of the game.
Faked injuries. Yeah. But he was getting close to hitting the over on his prop. He faked injuries. Like, he had like an eye injury or something, and it's just, he's like, my eye, I got to leave.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
So a stance on this for a while has been the regulation is what catches this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we catch this stuff, it shows the system is working. Mm-hmm. During the Alabama baseball scandal, granted, all of the details show everyone involved to be among the least intelligent human beings alive in the history of sports gambling, when somebody is yelling at the man on the other side of the counter saying, I've got inside information. This is a winner. Can I put all of my money on this college baseball game? But the irregularities are detected by the sports book because everything is above board. So that side of it, you know, because Brad Underwood, Illinois head basketball coach, was asked about this at press availability yesterday. All the coaches at all the different Sweet 16 sites are being asked about it. Mostly a lot of these coaches are saying, yes, I'd be great to be able to see player props leave the market.
They would love to have them all removed, period.
I do not follow with the integrity of the game because the integrity of the game is always being checked. Mm-hmm. Like that is what the entire market is doing. The harassment part is what I can actually follow the logic on.
But I will say, like, the law of unintended consequences, if you do ban it, like you're saying with the regulated market, it's not like we won't be able to bet on college player props anymore. You'll just find a different place to do it where it's not as regulated and it's harder to keep track of what's going on. As far as the harassment aspect to it, like, players are going to get harassed no matter what, whether it's betting, winning, losing, whatever. Like, it's the attitude of the fan, especially now in a terminally online world where social media allows you to connect with people in a way that you hadn't been before, and you can just go online and be an asshole for no reason other than you're just an asshole. Like, whether it's betting or anything, that's still going to be the case. So even if you remove the prop bets, these players are still going to be getting abused, whether it's in person or online. So to me, again, I understand where they're coming from. If it happens, it happens. I don't know if it'll change anything if they do. And in fact, like I said, with we talked about the unregulated part, it could make things some a little bit worse. Because we could also argue the reason all these guys are getting caught and the reason this is a headline in the NBA, in the NFL, in soccer, now in college basketball is because of the regulation of the market.
And that's also where I come back to something that you said, which is look to Europe and look to just sort of the way that everything got leveled out a little bit. Are there still investigations into Tonali? Like, are there still scandals that pop up? Yes, but it is not, it has been checked enough that it is not as much of a, you know, wild, wild west. It's not as much of a fury of people just rushing to the market. Like, yeah, there are, I mean, I know all of the wild European and Asian betting options, thanks to the front of uniforms of soccer teams. 888 bet, you know, like X bet. Like I know
Chinese that symbol I don't understand bet.
Right. And they're very out front because people often talked about that too. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're getting, because you mentioned North Carolina. I mean, we've been getting flooded, you know, like flooded with all the advertisement. And people look at it as though it's just like society is crumbling, you know. And I'm telling you that it will calm down, things will level off, and I imagine that that with these, the college props will hopefully get to a place like that too.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's like, this is the thing. There's always something that's the downfall of our society. Like, I remember I'm old enough to remember when heavy metal was going to destroy this country because it was going to lead to satanic rituals and kids killing people because Iron Maiden or whatever told them to. And it's like, then there was, you know, like gangsta rap is killing our children. It's going to blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, yeah. And right now, gambling is the pearl clutching thing because it's new and because it's introducing something that people aren't used to yet.
100%. Okay, let me grab. Yeah. Trip in the Cover 3 tailgate says, remember Tipper Gore?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a
family values.
Family Values. That's
inspired
right.
A great tour, by the way. That was, I always had fun at the Family Values tour.
Did you go?
Hell yeah.
Oh, man. It was just a 1 year in 98, right? Or was there a second
one? No, there was a few years. But the first one, I think, was the best one, yeah.
Because the first one was Korn, Limp Bizkit, Ice Cube.
Rammstein.
Orgy.
Yeah. Incubus. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, it was a good time. Stained was on there for a while, too, yeah.
Because you had to get the Fred Durst Stained guy duet up there.
I'm feeling those lighters, y'all.
Shout out to the Family Value Store. All right, let's take a look into the big old bag. A reminder, if you would like to add a question to the big old bag of mail, you can do so by leaving us a 5-star review. And in that review, put your mailbag question. We'll tackle it in a future mailbag episode. Okay. This question has to do with the early signing period change. Username RJG850. Hey guys, love the show. With the new early signing period, and again, it's moved up to the beginning of December rather than the third week of December. With the new early signing period, do you think we will see coaches now start with their new team before their current season ends with their old team? Also, do you think schools will punt on that transition class even more than they do now, and just be transfer heavy since the coach will not have any time? So the way that I'm understanding this question is about the different ways that you would approach roster construction, staff construction, those other consequences of moving this up. We talked about some of the benefits of not having an early signing period, you know, 3 days before the college football playoff starts and moving it up into conference championship week. But what about the staff hiring and the other fallouts from that? Do you see some ripple effects along those lines?
Possible. What's interesting is I think that if you look at it from, you know, like a head coach leaving his current gig to go start the new gig while the season's still going on, I can see that. Where I think you run into problems is, how does that coach put a staff together while the other seasons are still going on? Is like the running backs coach at another school just going to leave and go to his new gig too? So it's like, it's not just you. At that point, you are now plucking coaches because you're not taking your entire staff with you. Like, even if you're the head coach at your current job, you take some of your staff, but you typically don't see a coach able to take the entire staff with him. If you're an assistant, you're definitely not taking the entire staff with you. So you're going to have to pluck from other schools. Are those guys going to be willing to leave their gigs too during the middle of the season? Probably not. So I can't say it's impossible. I just don't think it's that likely. I think that the more likely scenario is kind of what he's getting to, where with the early signing period, maybe you just kind of punt a little bit on your recruiting class and hope to make up for it in the transfer portal. But at the same time, kids don't have to sign at that early signing period if they don't want to. Like, if you are in that class and you are committed to that school and the coach gets fired, you might have already decommitted and opened up your recruitment again. But if you're not, you don't have to sign that first time. You can wait until the new guy's in charge and, you know, feel out the thing and see if you still want to go there.
I think that the moving of the early signing period has the potential to change the balance of how many prospects are going early and how many prospects are going later.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, but there have been too many instances of the coaching carousel continuing to move, because now that we've got 12 teams in the college football playoff, I mean, how many jobs are not going to be filled as quickly and are going to be filled later?
Yeah,
because coaches are, guess what? Some of the most coveted coaches for the best jobs in any hiring cycle in a 12-team playoff are probably in the college football playoff. I think that the early signing period is not going to wreck, because that says it's negative, but I think it is going to change both recruiting, the rhythms of the hiring cycle, and in that certainly is coaches, you know, leaving a team before their bowl game. That already happens all the time. But the recruiting side of it, yeah, that's going to be fascinating to watch how it plays out. I look to Alabama. And granted, a lot of that group was on board, obviously, when Nick Saban was still there. But even when they had the opportunity to do what Julian Sayin did and leave because of the coaching change, a lot of that recruiting class, which was really, really good, stuck around.
Yep.
And my assumption is it's because you were committing to Alabama. Like, that's you were committing to Alabama, and there's not a lot of programs who can say that and be on that Alabama status. But I think that's got to be your hope if you are, you know, a prospect when you're committing to a school more than ever with this current calendar. Make sure that you're excited about going to that program as much as you are joining that coaching staff.
Mm-hmm. And also, my theory is with the signing day, we will see players committing early because that's what they did the first time. And you kind of get the message that from these kids that they want to get it over with as soon as possible too. And also they want to reserve spots. And I think that you can do that more easily now because of the transfer portal. It's like, well, I can just get my spot reserved here. And then if I change my mind, I'm still free to leave and go do something else.
All right. Let's go one more question right here. Bud has talked, it's a big fan here and a question. Bud has talked convincingly about a future where college football players are unionized and can negotiate with colleges. What do you all see as the likelihood of this, given the Southern and more conservative bent of college football? Do you think states may resist unionization of college athletes even as they passed NIL laws? I think this makes sense in the long term as a way to deal with the many antitrust issues facing NCAA restrictions, but I'm worried that the process of setting up unions for college athletes could be upset by politicians who are not as union friendly.
I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know, but I will say that the one thing I've always felt is ironic about this country is that we are a capitalist society who is very much socialist when it comes to our professional sports leagues. And we don't mind a kept kind of market when it comes to professional sports. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if everybody is fine. Like if the congressman from Georgia who hates commies is okay with limiting how much players can make because it'll keep them in Athens playing for the Bulldogs. I'm guessing that their feelings on that will change because it is the funniest thing to me in that American sports are communist, European sports are capitalist. It's just a complete flip of the dichotomy of the way things usually work.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here because that level of analysis, I'm not sure my little dumb brain's going to be able to get. I
took Econ 101, Chip, so I know a lot.
I think that there is I think there's another step that I even don't mention, you know, because in radio interviews here on the podcast, I'm like, and when we get into a future with collective bargaining, you know, and when we get into a future where we're, you know, these guys are employees and they can collectively bargain, I paint it as a utopia, actually not a utopia. That's not fair. But I paint it as the answer to our problems. And I am ignoring some of the more clunky, you know, political process that it's going to take to get there. I do think that we have seen that when it comes to matters of, you know, college athletics, we have seen, you know, both sides of the, he mentioned Southern and conservative bent. I think we've seen both Republicans and Democrats get together with at least the effort of wanting to make the college sports experience better for everyone who's a part of it. I think that if you want to go with like big beat your chest American pride, the college sports is something that is uniquely American. Mm-hmm. And so whatever it's going to take to be able to preserve it, I do think that's something that can hopefully get anybody who needs to be able to cross the aisle and come up with some solutions that make sense for everybody. But it is, I've just way too quickly been going through and been like, when we get to collective bargaining, when we get to collective bargaining. And I have not considered all of like the fundamental paperwork that would go into setting up a body for these athletes to be able to collectively bargain. It's a little bit of a brain twister, you know, to try and get too deep into it.
Yeah, my absolute guess is that the government will not be the biggest impediment to unionization as much as the size of college football will be the impediment to unionization because...
Oh, like 13,000 players,
yeah.
And they're and only even if here you, for 5 years. Like this, it in general is a little bit of a very difficult group to get everybody to come together and agree.
Yeah, even if you break it off into like a Super League situation where like the Big Ten and the SEC ultimately keep expanding and they just break off on their own, you're still looking at somewhere between, you know, like 40 and 50 schools with however many scholarship players we've agreed to all trying to agree on the same format for doing it, which is going to be very, very difficult. Like, you know, this happened in professional leagues, but when these leagues all formed, I mean, obviously things were a lot different as far as the financial picture, but they were also a lot smaller. And they weren't making nearly as much money as they are now. So when you get these billion-dollar enterprises all coming together, they're not going to be thinking, we got to do this for the greater good. They haven't been doing that for 20 years already. It's going to be, we got to do this to make the situation better for us. And that's going to be the biggest roadblock.
Correct me if I'm wrong. In the NFL, we even have splits within the players' unions between like players at one end of the spectrum and players at one end of the other. It's hard to get them to all agree to the same thing.
There's like a civil war currently breaking out in the MLB players union.
Really?
Yeah. Because of like, there's the the quick and short is just some people aren't happy with what Scott Boras has done to the free agent market, and a lot of agents and players are kind of pushing back against him and the person in charge because they feel like that person is too closely aligned with Boras, and they would like a change in leadership to help spread the money out to everybody and not just Scott Boras' clients.
Mm. Is baseball the only professional league that actually is truly capitalist?
It's not truly capitalist, Chip. They have a salary cap. They call it a luxury tax.
I thought that sounds fake.
That's how you create a salary cap without saying you have a salary cap. They have a luxury tax. So that way every owner can say, well, I can't go past the luxury tax. I'll get penalized. Whereas the super rich can still go through it and they don't care. And the NBA has the same thing, but they're all salary caps. They're all excuses not to spend money.
So yeah, I mean, if our professional leagues have a trouble getting everybody on the same page, we are in for a much rock. And I don't mean this as like a downer, send you off into your weekend like this, but like, you know, I have continually said when we get to collective bargaining, and I just, this question really brought it to the front of mind. It is going to be messy.
It's going to be a bloodbath. Not literally, but figuratively. Yeah.
No, the bloodbath is going to be what Illinois does to Iowa State. Where you at, Isaac? Hey, Isaac at the tailgate, where you at? Been running that mouth all show.
It's going to be an excellent game.
Yeah,
it's going to be an excellent game.
It's going to be a phenomenal game, both of them. Again, make sure that you're watching the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight all weekend. You can catch it on CBS, the America's Most Watched Network, the Network of Stars, also on TBS as part of that partnership with Turner to bring you what I think is one of the finest events that American sports provides, which is the NCAA tournament. Second weekend. First weekend, we celebrate Cinderella. Second weekend, we get heavyweight bouts. These games are going to be awesome. So I'm looking forward to it. Morgan, I see you. I see you in the tailgate. You've been watching on Paramount and CBS. We absolutely love to see it. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Tom, thank you very much.
ILL.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.